The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to the 2017 Internal Medicine Board Review Course, sponsored by the American College of Osteopathic Internists. The course was held March 22nd through 26th, 2017, at the JW Marriott Las Vegas Resort and Spa. The course featured nationally known speakers presenting a wide variety of topics of interest to the internist preparing for certification or recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Hematology Oncology Board Review Questions is presented by Dr. Cheryl Kowalski and Dr. Kevin Hubbard.
Okay, all are true in anemia except... There it is. Patients who have thalassemia should never take iron.
So that's not true, because sometimes patients who have thalassemia need iron. They develop iron deficiency, but it has to be given judiciously.
Next question. In thrombosis and hemostasis, all of the following are true except...
So I was talking with someone earlier at my hematology board review last summer. There's kind of starting to be some sense of feeling that maybe we shouldn't be doing hypercoagulable workups at all, because we should be treating the patient and not the disease. So that's just something to keep in mind. But certainly consider this if it's going to help guide your long-term treatment of these patients.
In leukemia, all are true except...
So that answer's wrong, because the white count isn't always elevated at the time of diagnosis of acute leukemia.
All are false in lymphoma, except...
So that's the one true question or answer, that Reed-Sternberg cells are pathognomonic of Hodgkin lymphoma. Can't remember what the other questions were, but if you have any question about them, I was going to make a comment about one of them, but I can't remember what it was. So I need to have a copy of mine.
All are true except, and this looks like an M protein question.
Remember, looking for the false answer.
Okay, it's like we've moved on. Okay, this is one of mine. Biology of tumor growth most commonly follows which of the following mechanisms?
Have to go backwards because I have to see it.
Yeah, could we go back to the question itself? There we go.
So all these are true except one. So I think it's serum M protein is always elevated.
Okay.
So it's not, serum M proteins may not always be elevated at time of diagnosis. So you may not always have a monoclonal protein at time of diagnosis. So you might have plasmacytoma that the M protein is negative. So the bone scan is not usually helpful. We're usually using skeletal surveys for that, which is just plain x-rays of the bones. And then we can use erythropoietin alone as the first treatment of choice for myelodysplastic syndrome. So in myelodysplastic syndrome, if you look at your slide, there's actually two genetic mutations that are actually a good prognosis.
Okay, so next question. Biology of tumor growth. Yeah, 100%. Good job, you guys. Yeah, I don't even know what Orwellian statistical realization models are, but it sounded kind of fun. It sounded like Animal Farm, so I went with it. But, you know, as an example, you may get one of those questions where you can't quite figure it out. So, you know, play the cards you know. Vinyl chloride exposure is most commonly associated with which malignancy? Yeah, it's hepatic angiosarcoma. Angiosarcoma of the liver, vinyl chloride, it's a really common board question. I don't know why they love it, but they do. Which of the following is considered a non-modifiable risk factor for cancer development? Yeah, good job. Genetic instability, 100%. You guys nailed it. That's actually a little bit of a trick question because it presumes we've talked a little bit about modifiable versus non-modifiable risk factors. You know, think about things that you can change. If you're obese, you could probably work to become less obese. If you smoke, you can stop smoking. Those are modifiable risk factors. But, you know, the deck of cards you got dealt is your own genome. You can't really change that, at least not yet. So that's a non-modifiable risk factor. Good job. Which of the following is not known to predispose to the risk of developing transitional cell carcinoma of the bladder? Yes, past infection with schistosoma hematobium. Remember, look at the pathology. Schistosoma hematobium causes squamous carcinomas of the bladder, not transitional carcinomas. It sounds like a little bit of a trip up, but you know these are things that boards are known for. So I'm glad we had an opportunity to go over that. Which of the following measures improve the utility of serum prostate-specific antigen, PSA, in screening for prostate cancer? Yeah, the answer is all the above. And in fairness to you all, they don't really do all the above answers anymore, so I think I need to rewrite that question for next year. But it gives you an example of some of the things that they might add to a PSA question. So without taking a stance for or against, what sort of additional tools might you be able to use to improve sensitivity? So it's all the above. Which of the following would be most appropriate treatment for a 32-year-old otherwise healthy male with newly diagnosed AJCC stage 2B non-seminomas germ cell tumor? So stage 2B is going to be with lymph node involvement in the retroperitoneum. Yeah, there you go. Radical orchiectomy with either retroperitoneal lymph node dissection and or chemotherapy. Again, think about how you can get into that area of the body to treat it. If you just did the orchiectomy, you've still got disease in the retroperitoneum and probably other sites that you may not be able to pick up. You're going to need to do something more regional to try to take to try to treat that. So here's a way that you may not know a whole lot about staging, but think through the thought process of what do I do to treat the rest of this? How do I get there? And I think you guys are going to be just fine when you take your boards. Which of the following circumstances would anastrozole be best indicated? A 69-year-old woman with a 3-centimeter lymph node negative ER-positive tumor. And, you know, looking at the spread, I'm actually glad it went this way because there's an important point here that I don't know if I emphasized it or not. We can't use aromatase inhibitors in premenopausal women because there's enough estrogen around from the ovaries to counteract any of the effect that we're going to get from the aromatase inhibitors. So if you're going to use an AI, it has to be in a postmenopausal woman. It can be in a woman who's undergone bilateral oophorectomy. So that technically is a postmenopausal woman. So just so you know, if you kind of looked at the choices that you had, all the rest of those women were in their 30s. And so the presumption, unless they give you something otherwise, is that they're all still actively menstruating. So what would we do in that situation? The choice would be tamoxifen if we're going to use hormonal therapies in that setting. Which of the following does not increase the risk of developing endometrial carcinoma? Yeah, that's right, veganism. All those others, you know, this gets back into the may increase the risk, may decrease the risk. Again, they tend to love those questions on the boards. So kind of walking in with a little bit of an understanding about that is really a good thing. Good job. Which of the following is not associated with an increased risk for developing epithelial ovarian carcinoma? Like I said, they love these types of questions. Yeah, oral contraceptives. Okay, I think we got time for one more question. So we'll make this our last question, Claudette. In a patient with cancer, which of the following are correct regarding fever? Yep, all the above are correct. So these patients often get infected with things that they have in them. Those infections can be rather odd at times. Sometimes you're dealing with tumor-related fever. In that situation, look for a recurrent fever in the mid to late afternoon to early evening hours as being characteristic of that.